welcome to this week's episode of Aquadocs, the podcast that keeps you up to date on all things aquatic medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Greenfield-Feig. This week, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Eric Lippmann, staff veterinarian for Adventure Aquarium. On this week's episode, we're going to be discussing a novel method of science communication, that through art. Dr. Lippmann does a wonderful job making prints of fish and other animals that have passed away. It's a great way to honor both the animal and the teams that have worked so hard to care for them over the years. So without further ado, hi, Eric. Welcome to Aquadocs.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. I am quite passionate about the topic that we're going to be talking about today, which is science communication in different avenues. And your form is through art. My form is through podcasting, which I can argue both are forms of art. So it's going to be a great episode. Before we launch into that, can you tell our listeners about a specific story that helped get you to where you are today in your career?
Sure, absolutely. Believe it or not, I didn't always want to be a veterinarian. My main passion has always been the ocean and all of its inhabitants. So I was really interested in marine biology and had always been from when I was a child. So I went to an undergraduate university and majored in marine biology with no interest in really going into medicine. But after graduating college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with that degree. I knew that I wanted to work with animals. I liked doing research. So I looked into trying to get into a PhD or a master's program working with either aquatic invertebrates or marine mammals or sea turtles, and couldn't really get in touch with any researchers, any grad students. So I kind of hit a wall there. So while I was trying to go through that, I was working in husbandry and I was an animal trainer. So I worked with dolphins and sea lions and penguins, monk seals. And it was while I was working with penguins in Connecticut that I met their aquatic animal veterinarian and discovered that I could do both marine biology and medicine. And that was really the pivotal point for me where I shifted my mindset from I want to work with animals to I can do medicine and I can work with animals.
And it's great that you mentioned that your journey really took a turn, because I went into college thinking I was going to get my PhD. And it wasn't until I had an animal experience. For me, it happened also to have been penguins when I went down to Sankob in South Africa. And that experience also demonstrated to me, you can work with these animals in a research sense, in a clinical sense, in a husbandry sense. And there's this profession that I too hadn't quite understood, which is part of why we do this podcast, to demonstrate to those folks out there that this is a career path you can take, but also it's not really cut and dry. There's so many avenues you can take.
Yep. Absolutely. And it's so funny thinking back to my college days, because I actually was very briefly a member of the pre-vet club at the University of Hawaii. And they did one presentation. It was on dogs and cats. They had free food. I was all about it. And I didn't think about it for another minute until I was already applying to vet school.
Wow. So then you became a veterinarian, but I know that part of what you're really excited about in this field, in addition to the clinical aspect, is this art that you do. So tell us how you got into that.
Absolutely. The style of art is called gyotaku. It is a Japanese art of fish pressing or fish printing. I got into that at the University of Hawaii. There was an extra program that was similar to a minor where you could use marine science, marine biology to try to come up with a extracurricular project and almost kind of work on either a capstone or a thesis, but it didn't necessarily have to be research oriented. It could be art. It could be education. It was really broad and wide reaching. And it was while I was a member of that minor that I was exposed to this art form. And this is something that mostly came from Japanese fishermen that would go out and try to document their catch in some way. They would use rice paper and either squid or octopus ink in order to make their pressings. And this would allow them to be able to prepare the fish and keep it stored well, bring it back into market, and be able to demonstrate the size and type of fish it was and advertise the fish that they caught. So I found the really cool way that you can demonstrate scales and markings and the fins and the different shapes and variety of different types of fish that are out there, more than 30,000 species, and we don't know a lot about all of those. So that's kind of how I got into it before I became a veterinarian.
So while you were in this club, were there opportunities for you to go out on these fishing boats and see this firsthand?
Ooh, I would have loved that. No, the main exposure that I had to this art form was actually at a fish market. So Hawaii has one of the most famous fish markets in the U.S. because we do get so many fish that come in from the immediate area surrounding Hawaii, also other countries as well, sold in a big open warehouse where all of the fish are on ice and you can physically look at all of the fish that you're planning on purchasing. And a lot of the fish from that market get shipped overseas. They go to the mainland U.S. They go to other countries where they're used in Michelin star restaurants. So it was there that we actually saw the art being done by the fishermen.
Okay, so you had this experience in college. And now tell us how you've been able to incorporate that into your veterinary career.
So I didn't immediately incorporate it into my veterinary career. In fact, after I graduated, I worked in small animal emergency for a couple of years before specializing on aquatics. So while I was in small animal medicine working in ER, every now and then we would have patients pass away. And one of the things that we could give their owners as a memorable gift would be a paw print or a nose print, or in the case of small reptiles, we might do a tail print. And it was a way that we could give them a small piece of that animal that they love so much in a form of artwork that they could cherish. And it's really that idea that brought this art form from the back recesses of my brain to the front, because a lot of people who care for fish don't always really get the same opportunities that people who care for dogs and cats and more traditional species get. They don't always get that ability to keep something as a reminder of their beloved pet. And that's really when I started to bring this art back into my life.
And I think that's so special that you're mentioning that, because I'm working ER right now and you see people who a small act like that really does touch their heart. And so being able to do that for our aquarium colleagues, and people don't quite realize the relationship that you can form with a fish or other similar aquatic species, and being able to acknowledge that and share that connection with your aquarist is truly something special. So thank you for doing all of this.
Absolutely.
So why don't you tell our listeners what the process is actually like, start to finish?
Yeah, of course. So after the patient has passed, some fish have lots of scales. Some fish have no scales. The different varieties of scales that are out there is broad. For example, sharks have dermal denticles that are scale-like, but are not really scales. Other fish have bony plates, and some fish have absolutely no scales at all and are very smooth skinned. So all of this kind of plays into your ability to take a pressing or a print of them. The easiest prints that I do are ones of fish that have large scales that are very easy to identify on the fish. And the harder ones are the fish that are a little bit more smooth skinned. Sharks do press well. Rays don't usually press as well as sharks do. They're usually more smooth skinned. So the process usually entails wiping off some of the excess mucus that is on the skin. Fish, more than sharks, will exude mucus on their skin. A few different reasons for doing so. One, to protect their skin from trauma and from infection. And then two, when they are stressed, sometimes they will emit this mucus from their skin. The mucus will interfere with the paint's ability to get in all of the nooks and crannies around the scales. So I usually use a paper towel to gently wipe that off without causing too much trauma. After that, I place the fish onto usually a towel. This is so that I can open up the fins and really get the fish to spread out, and so that I can see the extent of all of the features that I want to be able to capture. After that point, I will use usually black paint to paint one side of the fish from front to back, making sure to get all of the fins, covering all of the scales. The trick is to not use too much paint. If you use too much paint, it just comes off really blotchy. So you kind of need to use a relatively thin layer of paint, but enough that it won't dry before you finish painting the whole fish. And I have been using just a standard black acrylic paint for that purpose. Now, I mentioned before that traditionally, Japanese fishermen would use a rice paper in order to print the fish. Rice paper is a little hard to come by. You can still get it, but it's more expensive than the paper that I tend to use. I use standard art, either tracing paper or roll of easel paper. Ideally, you want to be able to see through some of the paper in order to make sure that you're pressing the fish in an even way. You press the paper directly onto the fish and you use your hands or a blunt instrument to basically rub on the paper and get the paint to stick to the underside of the paper. And then as you're peeling off the paper, when you're done pressing it into the fish, you always want to go from front to back because the scales all overlie front to back. So after you've done your first pressing, usually the first one isn't always the best. Sometimes it takes a few goes before paint soaks into the right places on the fish, into the areas between the scales. Sometimes I get it on the first time where I've got a really good print. Sometimes it takes three or four before I'll get one that I'm really comfortable with. I let that dry, and that's just the base print right there. The eyes don't take up paint very well because they've got kind of a gelatinous texture to them. So after that first print is made, I will let that dry, and then I will use a picture of the fish to then go in and hand paint in the markings and the eyes and really capture that fish in its prime.
Wow. The whole process is fascinating and detailed. And so when you're going back through, the scientist in me is asking, if a patient is passing away, you're likely wanting to do a necropsy as well. So are you documenting the external features initially for your report, then doing the paintings, and then once you're satisfied with that, then do you go in and do the necropsy? And is that time frame changing anything with respect to those results?
It's a really great question. Fish, as I'm sure you know, have a tendency to autolyze a lot faster than many other animals, and that's tied in with that mucus layer that I discussed earlier. It traps in a lot of the healthy bacteria that normally live in and around fish skin. And when a fish has passed, those bacteria will actually start to proliferate and take over. So fish do break down very quickly, especially if they're left in water. And they're likely to autolyze in a few hours after passing. So doing the necropsy, if you intend to do one, is something that needs to be done in a timely fashion. Unfortunately, necropsies are often a little bit of a bloody process, and that probably not reflect well on the artwork if you're making it to help remind someone of the animal that they love. So generally, I will do the necropsy after I do the prepping, and I have not found any negative impact from actually doing the painting on getting histopath results back. That being said, I tend to paint the side of the fish that I am not cutting into so that I don't risk tracking acrylic paint into the fish. I do frequently wipe the fish off or rinse the fish off after I'm done with the painting process before I start the necropsy. I have not had a pathologist tell me that there is an unknown basophilic substance filling the lateral line that they cannot identify.
But when they do, you know what that'll be from.
I'll know what it'll be. Yeah.
So once you've added in all of these colors and it looks like the fish, what has this meant to the teams that you've worked with?
Every person has their own relationship with the animals that they work with. And some people have a very strong bond with the fish that they work with, that they see every day. Having this sort of reminder of that animal that has passed, that they love so much, in some cases is completely invaluable to them. I have had aquarists tell me that they have a complete wall in their home of my paintings, and it makes them sad and happy at the same time to be able to reflect upon all of their beloved friends.
Yeah, it's so special that you do this for your colleagues and to honor both the animals, but also your colleagues' time and effort that they've spent caring for these individuals. So it's truly a thoughtful and innovative way of honoring those patients. I know you've also brought some of these prints to IAAAM. So are there other ways for folks to see your art?
Since last year, I have been bringing the prints to IAAAM. I donated a bunch of them to the silent auction that happened. I do plan to bring some really cool, larger print to IAAAM this coming year in Galway, Ireland. Can't wait for that. I would love to have some other way to show off the paintings and really bring people into this art form. I love that you brought this up. So not only did I bring my art to IAAAM this past year, but there were at least a few other vets who brought their artwork, exactly the same art form, to the conference. And I feel like this is a growing thing amongst the aquatic veterinary community, at least those of us that manage large fish populations and have time and artistic inclinations. The combination of science and technology and art is truly invaluable in exposing as many people as possible to the work that we do and really getting them to appreciate the animals that are out there in the world that they might not see on their own unless they're an avid diver.
And I think that what you're describing, that intersection of science, technology, art, is the way that we're going to continue to grow as a scientific community. I took a course in college all about this topic, and I vividly remember an artistic performance of a dancer who went out on one of the National Geographic explorations in the Arctic, and she did this beautiful dance out on the ice to describe the changing climate and the decrease of the ice cap, and she was able to take her skills and apply it to a much larger discussion. So I'm excited to see what people continue to do over the next few years, because I think this is a growing and very important aspect of our society.
I completely agree.
Is there anything else that you've learned through this process?
Yeah. Getting to my position has been, let's say, stressful, to say the least. Going through veterinary school, period, going through small animal rotating internship, going and working veterinary ER, it's a grueling pace. And in vet school, you're there 40 hours a week in lecture. You're doing another 40 to 120 hours a week of studying. And you have all of your large exams that you need to pass in order to get through each year. Once you graduate, you want to specialize. You need to do internships, you need to do residencies, or at least try to do them. The other path, of course, is to do experience-based route, which you can do, which I am currently trying for. But internships are also a grueling pace, and your quality of life is important. Doing this artwork is borderline very therapeutic. It kind of allows me to turn off my brain a little bit and just let the paint flow. And that's very healing for me at the end of a long day where I'm a clinician for all of these animals. And I just get to kind of take my time and see what kind of beauty I can create.
And I'm glad you have that, because I feel like so many people get bogged down in work and you need another outlet. For me, it's podcasting, or in vet school, I played on the Cornell Club softball team. So it's so nice that you have this avenue where you're able to do such good for other people, but also for yourself as well. So thank you for sharing that.
Of course, least I can do.
So before I let you go, I know you're passionate about helping the next generation of veterinarians. So do you have any advice for young aspiring veterinarians who would love to be working in the aquatics or zoological industry one day?
The most I can tell you is just don't give up. This industry is difficult to break into. There are not too many positions. They are increasing in number, albeit slowly, and there are lots of people who are interested. This is a very enticing field, and a lot of people want to work with really amazing animals. Best I can say is don't give up. If you really love doing this, the position, the opportunity will open up, and you will have chance to be able to get experience, even if that's shadowing, volunteering on your time off as a way to get your foot in the door. There are ways to get into this field. Don't give up.
Very wise words from both a great clinician and a great artist. So, Eric, thank you so much for being here today on Aquadocs.
Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Aquadocs. I'd like to thank Dr. Eric Lippman for being on the show this week, our sponsors WAVMA, AAFE, and the Cornell Wildlife Health Center, and all of you, our wonderful listeners, for tuning in. As always, check out our Facebook and Instagram to stay up to date on the latest Aquadocs news. And if you have an extra minute, please rate us 5 stars and leave a review. I'm Michelle Greenfield-Feig, and we'll see you next time here on Aquadocs.